Welcome to a very special podcast edition where we uncover the extraordinary stories that lie hidden in the shadows. Today we have a guest who has all the essence of intrigue, secrecy, and espionage. Jack Philip Barsky is a former sleeper agent with the KGB who operated undercover in the United States for a decade. Picture this, a real-life James Bond living a double life, navigating the treacherous world of intelligence gathering at the very height of the Cold War. My name is Charmaine Tan, and it is my great pleasure to welcome Jack Barsky, JB, to the show today.
Living Life in the Shadows, Secrets of the Undercover Spy Edition.
We were the number one asset as far as agents. The longer you live that life, the more you become the person you're supposed to become. That is why the KGB hinted that my assignment would only be about 10, 11 years, because they were afraid that if you stay too long, you won't come back.
Over to you. Maybe if you can just introduce to your audience and listeners a bit about your story and what makes it so intriguing.
What we call the elevator speech. Okay, so I was born and raised in East Germany. I was born 4 years after World War II, so I'm an old guy. But so East Germany, that was occupied by the Soviet Union. That means I grew up in a communist country, and I believed in communism as much as as you can believe in an ideology. I studied chemistry. I have a master's degree in chemistry, and then I worked for 1 year at the university as a professor, and then the KGB invited me to join them. I got 5 years of training. 3 years in Berlin, Germany, East Berlin, and 2 years in Moscow, Russia. Moscow particularly, because in Moscow there were like three Americans, born Americans, that I could work with to complete the study of English. And to a point when I was able to enter the United States pretending that I was born here. Okay, which is highly unusual to do something. Most spies like me were sent to other countries, such as they became citizens of Canada and then they emigrated into the United States. I was unique in that respect because of my, I had a talent to acquire languages, to speak with very, very little of accent. I still have it, but it's in New York, nobody paid attention. And then, so after 10 years, I quit the KGB. I can tell you later on why. And then the FBI finally found me. I cooperated very much, and I am now a citizen of the United States, and I wouldn't want to live anyplace else. I might live in Australia, actually. This is one of the countries that... And I'm not kidding.
We have lots to offer. Yeah, so yeah, and definitely would love to have you down here one of these days.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Jack. I think I'm very intrigued by that 10 years as well about what you did while you were undercover. But back in 2015, your story gained significant attention when it was featured also on 60 Minutes in the episode titled The Spy Among Us. So yeah. Maybe give us a summary of what was your key mission back then.
Let me tell you something. The KGB didn't even tell me what my mission, what the most important mission was. I found out afterwards, mm-hmm. when there were some people who were high up in the KGB who gave interviews when the KGB didn't exist anymore. Okay, so picture this Cold War. You're too young to have been anywhere near the Cold War. But the Cold War was a very, very tense situation, particularly the 10 years I worked. The United States and the Soviet Union were very much enemies. And there was always a question the possibility for a nuclear war to break out. It was the three times we got very close. And during the Cold War, there was an espionage war. And most spies in those days were all diplomats. They were under diplomatic cover. As a matter of fact, all KGB spies in the U.S. were diplomats, except for the illegals, like me. The diplomats were protected by diplomatic immunity. If they were caught, they were just kicked out. And so this is what happened. The Soviet Union kicked out American diplomats. The Americans kicked out Soviet diplomats. And there was a possibility that diplomatic relations would be stopped altogether. And in that case, only the illegals, like me, would be left over in the country. So that was the most important thing for the Soviet Union. For me to live here was the most important thing, was to live here, period. I also got some tasks, but I have I met a colleague of mine who was also German, is German, who came to the U.S. with his wife, and he had no tasks. All they told him, oh, just like get a job, live there, and we'll tell you when we need you. And that was all. I worked at what we call in the business a spotter. I identified individuals who might be good targets for recruitment, particularly younger. I went to college again in the United States. I studied again, and I met a lot of young people. And there was always a possibility that they could wind up in government. Mm-hmm. And so you're looking for certain character traits. And so I don't know what they did with these proposals. No, I was never told much.
Okay, so they deployed you there, but they didn't really tell you about your mission. And you just have to remain undercover for years until they want to activate you, I guess. And then they will reach out.
Yeah, that's what you call a sleeper agent. And, you know,
right.
Now, again, I had some tasks. For instance, a couple of times they sent me out of New York to check on two people, one in Atlanta and one in California, because the diplomats were not allowed to travel outside of a 50-mile radius. So they would have to ask for permission. I could go any place. And I succeeded to find a defector from the KGB who was under a death sentence. Now I didn't know that. I found out later, but I saw him and I heard his name spoken on TV, and I said, oh my God, thank God he died of natural causes. So but they were thinking of actually killing him.
Okay, so interesting. So they only give you pieces of the puzzles, and you don't really know the whole story, and you discover it along the way just by chance.
The KGB is known as having been the most secretive intelligence agency. They were so paranoid about, you know, betrayals, traitors, and so forth, and they were. They only told you what they thought you need to know to do your job. And sometimes what they thought I need to do my job wasn't enough.
Right.
But secrecy was number one.
Yeah, Jack, out of curiosity, how do they communicate with you, though? What tools they use to give you permission?
So I got my instructions exclusively through shortwave radio transmission, Morse code.
It was
only digits, no letters, you know, because it was encrypted. Okay, so you get a string of digits, 1 through 0, and then you had to do an algorithm to do some math on these digits, and finally come up with a message. I used secret writing. You know, it's like you write a letter to somebody who you don't know. You know, you make something up, and then you use copy paper, but it's not the copy paper that produces something you can see. There's a chemical that's on the paper that leaves a little trace on that paper, and then when that gets developed, it's readable. And then that gets sent to some country in South America or in Europe to an address where the individual was cooperating with the KGB. And you see, that took a while. You know, the airmail took a little longer. And so this, you have a conversation with a KGB agent, with this, what we call a handler, your boss.
Yes.
That was not allowed. The rule was for an undercover agent never to meet another KGB agent in the country where he operates. And the reason for that was the other agents were most likely known by the FBI to be KGB.
And okay.
If they were followed, I could be...
it will compromise your situation.
Exactly. You said the right word. And it took so much time and money to find and train us. They didn't want to risk losing us. Not a single one. We were the number one asset as far as agents.
Wow. So you're like the ghost agents, yes. And how do you know how many of them there were back then? Or you guys had no idea?
There's a book that's called The Sword and the Shield. This is my Bible as to what went on in the KGB, because whatever's in that book is information that was smuggled out of the KGB archives. It was an employee of the archives who started to hate the Soviet Union. And so he, year after year, he smuggled little pieces of paper out. And then he typed it all up. And then in 1992, he gave us to the English Secret Service, the MI6.
Wow.
There's something in there about illegals, and it says 10 of us, 10, only 10, in the late 70s to mid-80s, they trained 10 of us. It doesn't say what happened to the 10. So I know about me, and I know about this other guy.
Wow.
The other 8, we don't know.
Oh, they may have,
very likely that quite a few of them had to abort the mission. It was a very, very difficult mission to pull that off.
Yeah, that's such an elite group. Somehow I had the numbers of maybe hundreds. I didn't realize.
No. It was so hard to find candidates who are risk takers, who are very smart, who can do stuff on their own. They don't need to have a team, who have language abilities. And there were a whole lot of things that had to get come together. And that combination was hard to find. And again, this comes out of the interviews that I read. I can imagine. I mean, this is crazy. The risk that I took is nuts. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of that, well, how did you land up into that? Like, how did that become a career for you?
Well, you know, I was born with a high tolerance for risk. You know, even when I played, I would climb trees that I shouldn't have climbed, and I got injured a lot. And it's just like, I also misbehaved in high school, and that was risky. I almost got kicked out of high school. I mean, misbehaving in East Germany was like making jokes and and asking questions of the teachers that they couldn't answer, right? but I tell people, I am very light-hearted. I'm very playful. And for most of my life, I played life. I didn't really live it so seriously.
Mm.
So that, to me, failure was not an option. Everything, once I started studying in high school, everything that I touched, I did. I was very good at, if not the best. And eventually that makes you very optimistic. Oh, everything's going to be all right. And I knew that I might wind up in jail, but I also knew that as long as I have a book, I would be okay in jail. Because when I grew up, I was very often just by myself. It wasn't the country, and you couldn't just walk across and find somebody to play with. So I had to entertain myself a lot.
Yep.
So quite a solitude life in a way. You're quite independent as well.
Oh yeah.
So
Oh,
yeah.
absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't like to take orders from anybody.
Okay, so maybe then that does give a bit of insights already into your life, as an undercover sleeper for the Soviets. But what would you say, how was it really like when it comes to living it out, in reality, the double life for such an extended period of time?
Right. Well, I know that I had constructed a dual personality clearly because, I went every 2 years, I had the opportunity to go back to Moscow and then also to Germany. Now, here's something I'm not proud of. I was married in Germany with a son, and I was married in the United States with a daughter. And when I dated girls in Germany, I never dated two girls at the same time. I was always faithful. Same thing here. But I had no problem being married to two women. That means cheating on both of them. That's the dual personality, this encapsulation. And I still feel this. I speak both languages fluently, but I'm very bad at translating. Because just for argument's sake, my English speech center is here and my German is here, and they're not very well connected. Yep.
Okay, wow. So it's hard to bring both lives together, but when you're leaving one life, that becomes your reality and
Oh
that
yeah.
you set your roots in and you grow and you end up having a family as well, and then you
Yeah.
believe that the truth of your life. But when you go
Yeah.
back to Germany, it's a different life that you kind of change your hats and put on a different hat.
That was the other truth, but you were very insightful. The longer you live that life in another country, the more you become the person you're supposed to become. And that is why the KGB hinted that my assignment would only be about 10, 11 years, because they were afraid that if you stay too long, you won't come back. Well, I didn't.
So that happens like on the 10th year, you decided, okay,
Well,
you're
I was
out.
towards the end of the 10th year, and so I told you I was married in the United States in those days, and I had a daughter. If I can get up, I can show you the picture, what she
Well,
looks like. You see that? Yeah. And I watched her grow up, but she was 18 months old when the KGB called me home. And they called me home urgently because they, for some reason, believed that I was about to be arrested. It was an emergency. Okay. It's like, go quickly to Canada, go to the Soviet embassy, and we get you out. Yeah, but I had this girl, and her mother was not well educated. She had only 4 years of schooling. She was from South America. And I knew that if I leave them, this girl would grow up in poverty. And it was a hard decision to make because there was a danger that I would get arrested if I don't leave. And if I defied the Soviet Union, they would maybe interpret this as defection, and I knew that they didn't like defectors very much. As a matter of fact, they assassinated some of them.
Don't go away. We will be right back with Charmaine Tan and Jack Barsky with the decision that changed his entire life.